Oh, very welcome to a brand new episode of You Must Be Joking podcast with me, Eric Lawler.
Me, Will Are We.
And today, our guest can read your mind, influence your thoughts, and make you question every decision you've ever made, including listen to this podcast. He's Ireland's most famous mentalist, and he's about to embark on his biggest tour yet. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the one and only Keith Barry!
Jeez, lads, that's a great introduction for three people in a room.
Yeah, that's why I let him do it all the time. I could not, Teddy. I could not even reach 50% of that energy.
I've seen you do that.
you have to have that energy. It's like when, you know, when we're doing gigs in front of six people or in front of 600 people, you give it the same energy and shabazz as if it's a full room, don't you?
Yeah, of course you do.
That's showbiz.
It sets it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually did within a week. And this is not a joke. I didn't even know I was going to say that. A few weeks ago, I did a gig for six people in Vila Moura in Portugal. And then a week later, I did the AIB Leadership Conference for 3,000 people in the three arenas. So there's a difference between two different groups of people.
Tell me the Vila Moura gig. What was it? Only six it people. Mad. What was that all about?
It was just weird. It was just this guy that I know. He hired me for a gig before. And he was bringing a couple of lads down on a kind of a golfing weekend. And he asked me if I was available to go down to do an actual gig. And I was like, okay, how many people? He said six. I was like, okay, I'll go down and do it. So yeah, just went down and entertained them over
pretty
dinner
crack.
For 2 hours.
Blew their minds for 2 hours.
Yeah, just
very, very intimate. But your type of gig would work in a setting like that. Because you can, like, as you said, you could six people, 3,000 people.
Yeah, I can downscale and upscale.
Yeah, we find it very, very difficult to do gigs like that.
Yeah, but I'll tell you why, though. But you still have the ability to do it. Like in that scenario with six people, like, I wasn't standing up doing a stand-up act. It'd be like you sitting down having dinner with them, telling jokes or having the crack over dinner and getting paid. And it's the same with me. But I think there's something to be learned from that. Like, meaning the fact that you can do that, I don't think these days the younger generation can do that because they haven't put in the graft. So like you guys have put in the graft. I know you a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I've put in the graft. So I burnt my hands on the McDonald's toasters. I did the kids' gigs and I got killed in the kids' gigs and they pulled me jacket off and tore me watch off and everything, right? And everything in between. But that gives you then the headspace.
You're gigging a Ballymun,
I've done a few gigs there. But that gives you the headspace then to be able to be malleable given whatever scenario you throw.
When you've done the rough ones, and we've all been in the trenches and doing gigs where you come out of the place and go, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But they just build resilience.
Yeah, I remember.
They build, for when it's all right.
Like. I remember plenty of the horrendous ones. I remember more horrendous ones than they do the really good ones.
That seems to be the go-to, isn't it? Like, I think any entertainer, we spoke this before on the podcast, Keith. Like, say if you're in Vicar Street, there's 1,000 people there.
Yeah.
The place in uproar, but you're focused on the one fucker who's not smiling.
Yeah.
Just standing there with a staunch face. They're like, what's wrong with him?
Well, I had one of them the other night at a gig. I haven't had a heckler, lads. I'm telling you now, in 20 years, because 20 years ago when I, we all get hecklers.
Yeah.
When we're younger, but I have a certain way to put hecklers down that they just stop straight away. Like, it didn't bother me anymore because I'd either hypnotise them or I'd hypnotise their wife or I'd just do something to just
horrify them. You have to teach us that technique, Keith, so we can use it as well.
Well, it's a good technique because I don't have your skill set to be able to put hecklers down, so I just kind of samurai sword them off the head straight away, right? And word kind of got out, don't bother heckling him. I had a heckler, but it was at a private event, so you have to be really careful, right? Because it was only for, I'll skew the numbers a bit, so if the people are listening, they won't know. Definitely them.
Yeah, yeah.
There were 70 people at this event, right? It was an intimate event, but it was all family kind of people and friends of this person. So I was like, how do I deal with this person now? Because he's been an arsehole, but I have to make sure that I don't react to this. So anyway, I dealt with him. It was fine, and it didn't really affect the rest of him. But he came up to me afterwards, Willa, and Eric, and he came up and he said, do you ever meet many people like me now? You know, the hecklers and the fellows just being that guy and the arsehole. And I just looked and went, no.
Brilliant.
I actually made my night that he asked me.
Yeah.
And you could see him just, like, his whole brain just melted.
The soul, even his body.
Yeah, because he realised.
He's that one fucking Egypt.
I'm the one Egypt. But I remember, literally something sprang to my mind. Like, one of the most horrendous gigs I've done in years, and I mean a long, long, long time, it was a good few years ago, but it was in, I got hired to do an event in New York. I flew over, and I was in a nightclub, And straight away, nightclub, I was like, well, you know, this is not going to work in nightclub. No, I'll get you seating and all the rest. So the guy that we were dealing with said he gets seating and all this nice. And I was trying to figure out what these people. So it was going to be nearly all men, he said, and they're computer programmers. So I was like, okay, Grant, just make sure they're seating and staging lights and sound. But it doesn't need to be fancy. Just something I can get up on a box and they can hear me. Because there was going to be 150 in there or whatever. Anyway, I get there, no seating, right? I'd already told him you have to close the bar when I'm on. Didn't close the bar. So now 30 of them stayed at the bar. I'm on. Loads of lads are taught at the bar. And then I was like, what do these lads do? And I found out they were the computer programmers for Pornhub. That's what they were, right? And they just didn't care about anything.
It was a hard gig.
It really was, very. So I was there, and the next minute I went on, and the sound didn't work. And no one cared, and no one looked up, to the extent that the booker, the guy over there, he went up and he grabbed the microphone, he just started shouting at the ball, I paid a lot of money to have this guy over here, you all need to start listening to him. And I was just like, I actually was just going to go, you know, like, just give me your money back and I just walk off here. Like, are we done? I forged through, but they're the, I suppose, the gigs of fire that you have to get through, aren't they?
Oh, no, come here. And especially travelling all that way, it's not as if you just went down to Leitrim. What I mean? I jumped in the car, you're in New York, you're kind of gone.
Yeah.
And you want it to be good and memorable.
But this
and,
is the thing. Like, yeah, you come from a good place. Like, we all come from good places as entertainers that we have to be able to, you know, do our thing. But unless the production and the set is right, you're in trouble, like, you know.
And we always, I know for me in any way, if I haven't been to a gig that I've never done before, I draw this mental picture of the gig. You know, I have a mental picture of the room and what it's going to be like, and it's never anything like that.
No, it's not, no. Although I can kind of guesstimate. I've gotten quite good at guesstimating gigs. And then I also rate every gig on the way home. And I tell the missus when I come home, I go, I don't rate them, right? They can't rate them. I rate myself, though. I was shy tonight. I give myself 4 out of 10. Now, look, truth be told, they probably would give me 9
probably
out of 10.
Probably had a great time, yeah.
But I give myself 4 out of 10. And then I'm very hard on myself. Like, I'll only give myself 9 out of 10 maybe once a year out of hundreds and hundreds of gigs, like, you know what I mean? But yeah, I rate myself on the way home.
Well, that's not a bad thing either, Keith. I think, you know, I think we're our own biggest critics and we have to be in this business kind of thing. Like, you have enough people telling you how great you are, you need to have a little bit of grounding, don't you? And go, oh, do you know what? Yeah. I've been good, but it can be a lot better.
Well, that's,
you know
it. I mean? Yeah, like, if I don't get a stand and out, I'm pissed off. And some people think some people think it's a rarity. Like, if I don't get a stand and out every night on tour, I just think that's a flop tour. Do you know what I mean? I'm expecting a stand and out every night.
That's
I'm
putting high
that.
Expectations on yourself now, Keith. I wouldn't think it was that bad.
I'm telling you, like this particular tour now, the end of the show is a bit iffy.
Is it?
And what I mean by iffy is, I think everybody's going to be bawling crying in the audience. That's right. What, like, when you say you envisage, I actually think, but the bawling crying with joy.
Okay.
So I don't know if they're going to actually be standing up, because I don't think they're going to be so shocked at what the ending is.
And emotional.
So I've planned for an emotional ending to this. And I really, in my heart, think it'll work. But unlike, this is the difference between you guys and me. Unlike a comedian, I can't really get up in a small scenario and road test it. Like, because I've planned it for a big theatre. So it's a different kind of thing. And the whole show culminates in this end. And the whole show has to happen for the end to happen. So I can't go road test just the end, because everything else has to come before.
Yeah.
So it's like opening night is when I know. Jeez, it's just mental. Like, you know
that
what I mean?
Is tough, Ari. And the first night is the 2nd of January, like, it's straight into the new year.
Yeah.
The tour kicks off in?
In Wexford, in the National Opera House. It's almost sold out now, so amazing. It's nearly there. A couple of seats left, but I'm excited because, you know, it's an amazing theatre. Yeah. And, you know, and this show is called Unhinged for a reason. Like, my daughter is 17 now, and Brianna, and she, more than my son, she keeps saying, Dad, you know, I keep hearing about these stories about the Unhinged shows that you used to years ago. So she was talking about the dark side. So I told her about the dark side, which is me dabbling in witchcraft and voodoo. And I told her, I'd have you on my lap and I'd have a Ouija board and I'd be practicing at home. And I was that was a tour that I did at the dark side. And then it was the 8 Deadly Sins and the Asylum. And they were all kind of controversial and stuff. Yeah. And then I went safe because I had kids and all the shows. I'm still very proud of the shows, but they've been kind of just brain hacking and whatever. Anyway, in honor of her, I said, you want an Unhinged show, do you? I said, well, I'll call it Unhinged and I'm going all out. So then I was thinking, what will the show look like? You know, so I thought, first thing, hypnosis. I haven't done a hypnosis on stage in a long time.
Have you not?
No. So full blown hypnosis act. And for example, I'm doing the Tree Arena on February 7th. That's going to be the biggest.
Wow.
That's going to be the biggest stage hypnosis show Ireland has ever seen. So I'm going to have 100 people on the stage. Jeez. The 5,000 all hypnotized out their faces. And the good news is, could be your brother, or it could be you, or your mother.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, the people in the audience become the stars of the show.
Brilliant.
And if you can imagine a sing-off between, like, Spice Girls, Boyzone, and an Asian rap star, and they think they're in the Eurovision, but, you know, the stars of those bands are actually your loved ones. So there's hypnosis. And then my dad passed away in January this year, and I was very close with him, and he was real dark. Yeah, for context, you need to know, he's a real dark, sarcastic sense of humour, and he was always the life and soul of the party. But he said to me, late January this year, just before he passed, he was like, Keith, bring me on tour, would you? I was like, Dad, I think we know where we're at now. You're not coming on tour, like, you know. He said, you fucking idiot, you. I mean, me ashes, and mess with their minds. And I said, well, what does that look like? He went, have a seance for the crack.
Whoa.
So now, my dad didn't believe in an afterlife, and this is only a personal belief now, he didn't believe in an afterlife at all, right? Really? Didn't get any blessings as he passed. He was just staunch, like, atheist, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I don't believe in psychics, so I don't believe anyone can contact the dead. But in honour of my dad, I'm going to have a seance, and we're going to contact him anyway.
Go on.
And because of my skill set, things are going to go bump in the night.
I bet you wish you got him cremated.
yeah. I'd bring him. I got him stuffed. So
if you understand,
stuffed Ken Barry.
That's going to be amazing.
So it's like everything in between, laughing your head off, like, and then with the seance, like, I'm openly saying, what you're about to see is an illusion. But if you want to contact dead loved ones, just put your hand in the air, and then I'm going to contact them. And it's going to, but I'm telling them it's an illusion, right? And then the whole, and then there's loads of brain hacking. There's loads of, like, crazy fun elements. And then the end of the show is a very emotive piece, and it is bonkers what I've come up with.
Right.
And again, I won't know until opening night whether it works or not. You know?
So if anyone's going to that show on January 2nd in Wexford, let us know how we get on in that last bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But don't spoil the surprise.
Yeah. I think, that's my dad, just hang up on him.
My doctor,
look, I've seen some of your stuff, and it is always amazing. Like, you get your money's well worth of the show. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'd like to think so.
No, you definitely do. And I was listening to you there talking about mediums and that. I was very, very skeptical about stuff like that. And I went to see a girl who, funnily enough, has only recently passed herself. She passed away last week. And a lovely girl called Cara Bourne, she was based down in Wexford. And I went down to see her, and I was sitting there kind of going, you know, the usual thing. And and I went in, and she told me some stuff that she could have never known about my sister and my dad. And my mum was alive at the time as well. She kind of wanted a little bit of clarity and a bit of stuff about my sister, and she got that and much, much more. So they do exist, and it does exist. I believe that there's people that are born with that gift that can just tap into the spirit world, like, and talk to the spirits, you know?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We're all different. So I don't personally believe that that's true, but that's not... Years ago, I was very vocal on that, whereas now I'm way more open-minded. So if that's your belief system, I wouldn't in any way criticise that or say that I'm right and you're wrong, or you're right and I'm wrong. What I would say is you have to be very careful, because as opposed to most people, I have studied psychics extensively for many, many, many years.
Right.
I've been to a lot of psychics who've told me stuff that they couldn't have known, but I know what they're doing. That's the difference, because I'm educated. Now, that lady who passed, I wouldn't comment on her at all, because I don't know her, I don't know her work. But there's varying levels of some people, probably not her now, just especially since she's passed, right? So, but there are a lot of, like, just deceivers out there, right?
Yeah.
Who are very good, though.
Charlotte.
And will make you believe what they want you to believe and sound you out the door believing that they've contacted your dead loved ones. Like, people who come to my show, when I do this, they will say it was real, even though I'm telling them it's fake. That's how real I can make this look like, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a lot to it, a lot more that we can that we'd have time to unpack here today. You just need to be very careful, because here's why. A lot of people say, well, doesn't it give solace and maybe just a bit of peace to the person? That might be true, but I believe it actually interferes with the natural grieving process that we have to go through. You know, we all need to grieve, and that peacefulness, it's a fake level of peacefulness. And then the other thing, finally, like, a lot of psychics worldwide, they've taken a lot of money from vulnerable people. Now, I mean big money. So you might have went in and paid whatever you paid, 50, 100, 150, or whatever it was, right? But sometimes the psychics hook these people in, and these people can sometimes be very vulnerable and old people. So, like, there's stories out there that, like, elderly people have, like, literally given psychics their houses and, like, you know, Jesus, and live their lives then. Let's just imagine that the psychics are real for a moment, right? A lot of people take health advice from them, and the psychics can sometimes say, well, sorry, I was wrong. But if you're wrong and you've told that person that, you know, you don't need to take your medication, which some of them do, they give health advice based upon being psychic. It's a very dangerous route to it. So I'm not altogether knocking them. Like, I had Natasha Bracken on my own podcast. She's a psychic. And we had a very open and honest conversation, critical thought. She was respectful of me. I was respectful of her. And then you leave it up to your listeners. Your listeners listen to this. You leave it up to them to decide, are these people real or not? So it's not for me to say that they definitely aren't, but it's for me to say, if you're going to one, just educate yourself, like even a small bit on like cold reading, hot reading, rainbow reading, stock reading. So even people listen to this, be like, huh, what's all that?
They're all Googling.
That's what they're all using, right? Right. And sometimes some of these people are what we call shut eyes, meaning they believe they're real themselves, but they're not actually real, right? Right. And then some people are, you know, deceptionists. Like here's an example, right? So, Eric, I want you to think of something that if right now I was to guess it, you would actually know for real that it was inside your head, right?
Think of something. A word.
Something like that. Okay. And change your mind. Okay. And now look at me. Think how many letters are in this word. Can you do that for me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Now you went, mm-hmm. So you didn't have to think for too long. Okay. And you kind of had to count a little bit on your hand, but not for too long. So I'm going to say there's like 5 letters in this word. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Focus on the letters. Don't say it, just think it. Okay. Now, just for your listeners out there listening, and for you didn't tell me this word off air. There's no way I can know. Okay, focus on the word and imagine kind of the letters between us. In your head, imagine the letters between us and visualize just one of the letters for me. One of the letters. Don't say it, just think it. You didn't go with a vowel, did you?
The what?
You didn't go with a vowel.
No.
You see, vowels are too easy. I knew, like, a lady would have went for a vowel, okay, because men tend to go for a hard consonant. Did you go for one letter and then change your mind to another letter?
No.
No? Okay. N. There's an N in the word. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't say the word. Just say it in your head over and over and over again. Okay. I'm going to write something on my hand. There's an A also in the word somewhere? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Okay. And this is weird. Now, this is related to what we were just talking to.
I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it starts with an A and ends with an L?
Yeah.
Okay, what was the word you were thinking of?
Angel. Fuck off. Like, seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, angle.
Oh, yeah, I meant angle. No, that is angel. But I have a joke in me set when I talk about people, when you know, social media need a license. Yeah. And I go, he's up there lying with the angles.
There you go. That's why you've got angle.
Man.
But here's the other thing. You changed from one word to another. So in your head, you also thought of a longer word. Is that correct?
I did, yeah.
Okay. And focus on the last letter, ZYXWVUTSRQPONMLKJGFED. The last letter is an E. Is that correct? Okay, there's an object of some kind, and it's like something. Oh, got it. It's like an echo from your mind to mine. I thought of jam for a second, but jam's not long enough. Marmalade?
Fuck off! Fuck off! Like, how the fuck did you know that? Like, genuinely.
It was inside your head. But here's another thing for you. While I was doing that...
Holy shit!
While I was doing that, let's keep it simpler for a moment. not just because it's you.
I taught yourself calling me that.
But look, I have a deck of cards here. It's got a big black X on it. That X is important so that people out there know that there's no trickery involved. And you'll know there's no trickery involved in this. This isn't a sleight of hand magic trick. It's me getting inside your head.
Right.
Now, and not only is the black X there, I'll tell you there's one card reversed. It's upside down. It's going the wrong way. Okay, now look at me, Willa. I'm going to get that card inside your head. Your job is do not allow me to get that card inside your head.
Okay,
so look right at me. Look right at me. I know you're trying not to look at me. Look at me. So there's the ace, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, jack, queen, king. Ace, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, jack, queen, king. Let's make this more interesting. Let's make this really interesting. All you need to do is name any card that's not the card reversed. And if you name any card that's not the card reversed, for real, and hold me to this, I'll give you €1,000.
Can I do it?
No.
Name any card
that's not the card reversed. So if you name any of the other 51 cards, the cards are, it's in your favour now. Any one of the cards, any one of the 51 cards, they're going the same way, you win. But if the card that's face down is the card you name, I win. So I'm trying to influence you to pick the face down card. That's the game. And the black X is here as evidence of the experiment. So 3, 2, 1, name a card out loud now.
Two clubs.
Now, later on, you'll notice. every time I named the cards out loud, I don't know if you noticed, I went ace, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. I snapped on the two every time. You can rewind this. People at home can rewind this. I snapped on the two every time, right? I'm just saying that I did that. And people can rewind it. They can see that. Yeah, influence. So I put the two clubs inside your head. But now you can change. Now, you don't have to change, but I want you to know you have that choice to change. You don't have to change, but you can change.
Okay, I'm changing.
Now, see, the question you have to ask yourself now is, would I have asked you to change if I didn't want you to change? So, are you going to change?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, name any other card.
Seven of spades.
Now, are you locking in the seven of spades?
For no.
Okay, go again.
Jack of clubs.
Jack of clubs?
Yeah, I'm staying with that.
You sure now?
Yeah. Locking that in?
Yeah.
Okay, I knew you wouldn't pick the Queen of Hearts. Right? I knew you wouldn't pick. So the Jack of Clubs, yeah?
Yeah.
Locked in. Locked yeah. and loaded. Like, I knew you wouldn't pick the Queen of Hearts. So look, I put a big black X through the Queen of Hearts. Right? Mm. I destroyed this whole deck before I came in here today. Like, I destroyed the whole deck. So I knew you wouldn't pick any other card. Look, I knew you wouldn't pick any of those. So I put a big black X through all of them. And I'm going slowly, so I can't possibly cheat. Like, I can't cheat, right? And you said the Jack of Clubs. Look, I'm going slowly. I can't even go any slower than I'm going. There's one card reversed. Every other card's got a big black X going through it. Every card except there's one card reversed. Take it out and turn it over. I don't want to touch it. I sent it. Turn it over.
What was it?
You got it.
Holy shit!
I win.
Holy shit!
And I keep my grand.
Fucking hell.
Because you changed your mind twice, like, you know what I mean? That is nuts.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my God.
Crazy.
Now, oh my God, I can't wait for like a few years' time when we have someone on Instagram revealing Keith Barty's tricks, because
and there's the two of clubs with the big black X through.
Jesus. And you only changed it last minute.
That's I just don't know how you do that.
That's mental.
Really,
that is literally mental. Literally mental.
Like, even the stuff with Eric, like, and it's mad, like, I just don't know. I just don't know what way your mind, how you do it.
Well, I'm putting thoughts in. I'm extracting thoughts out.
Yeah.
You know, and...
And is it? It's obviously a special skill set that you've built up over the years since you've... How long are you? 25 years now doing this?
So 25 years full time. This is my 26th year. I'm a cosmetic scientist by trade, by the way. I used to invent women's makeup.
Invent women's makeup?
Yeah. When I was 21, when I left college, that's what I did. Right. So my parents were like, magic's great, Keith. You're going to college.
Yeah. Of course you're going to be a magician, Keith.
I went to college in Galway. And then came down to Dublin and worked for Oriflame, which is a Swedish cosmetics company, and started to invent women's makeup. Then it kind of escalated on from there. It just snowballed from there, like, you know.
Jesus Christ.
So did you listen to the Foundations?
Yeah.
25 years of doing this, Keith, full time, as you say. But can you throw your mind way back to your very first ever live show? And like, and even to the point where you went, do you know what, I'm going to do a live show. What brought that on, and where was the first live show, and what was it like?
Well, kind of two thoughts come to mind when you say live shows, right? So when I was 14, I got a really good book on magic called The Klutz Book of Magic. You can still probably get it secondhand. So there's loads of really good tricks in that, like professional grade tricks. Right. So I learned all those. And then I don't know whether it was entrepreneurial or what the hell was going on in my head, but I borrowed my dad's suit. Now, my dad was about like 4 inches shorter than me, so I don't know how this worked out even in my head. But anyway, I borrowed a suit and I went in. Now, I'd gotten a couple of magazines on magic, because like there was no internet, right? So I didn't know what I was doing. But I read about this thing called table hopping, which is popular now, but at the time, no one had ever heard of it. And table hopping is where a magician walks from table to table, entertaining in between courses.
Yeah, you see
but in France, not just, you see it now at weddings, right? Mm-hmm. But in France, you'd see it in restaurants. So it was a thing. So I went, I put on my dad's suit. In my head, I went, I'm going to go to 20 restaurants in Waterford. I'll walk into 20 restaurants, and I loaded up my pockets with sponge rabbits and all these things, right? And I thought, at least one of the 20. I have a whole story behind sponge rabbits.
That's a great name for the band as well. Here's the sponge rabbits.
Yeah. I have a whole. I created a full blown security alert in Newark Airport, like full blown red alert, because I keep out with sponge rabbits. Well, anyway, that's all another story. But like, yeah, I'm serious.
Got yourself to a whole day, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I fucking did. But so I did this, and I thought I'd have to go to at least 20 restaurants before anybody said yes. So I thought I'll start at the top and I'll go trickle down. So the top restaurant at the time was the Wine Vault, and walked in there. David Dennison was the owner. I went up to him and I said, listen, I'm a young magician, I want to do, and I was ready to show him tricks. And he went, oh, I've seen this work in France, done. And he was like, he didn't even want to see a trick.
Wow.
And he said, when do you want to start? I said, this Friday. And he said, how much do you want? £20. I didn't know what to ask for. 14,
yeah, exactly,
15,
yeah.
£20. He went, done. And I was in there every year for about 4 or 5 years.
No way.
Every Friday night. And that's where I started learning my trade. So back to my first gig. My first gig was in there. And then I realised tips were a thing. So I was getting not a lot of tips, but people throw you €2 here and there. And then the odd time, somebody gave me £50. But like, I was probably coming out with, on average, £40 every Friday night, which is a lot of money for me.
Of course, yeah.
And then I was buying other tricks with and stuff. So that was my kind of first real gig. But then the horrendous first gig, like the first gig was...
Where people are paying in to see you.
Well, no, I got hired though.
Okay,
so I got hired as it was a corporate gig for Bosch and Lomb down in Waterford, right? And it was up in the old R3, which is now Jewries, which is now defunct, right? So it's just a big, old, horrible building in Waterford, right? But Bosch and Lomb, they hired me to do the kids' party. And sure, you know, I don't know what I was getting paid, probably it was £80 at that stage. I was charging them. Anyway, I went up. I had a really good act. I'd practiced it, rehearsed it, but I'd never done it for kids. Went up and... Sure, they just ripped me apart. Like I had this thing where I was making these eggs appear out of this silk handkerchief, and they just ran up and grabbed the cloth out of my hand, and then they realised that it was a fake egg on a string, and they were just running around. And then they grabbed me. I had a top hat at the time. They took that and just chucked it in the air, and then one of them like put his hand up my sleeve and pulled me flowers from my sleeve. Like, it was just like
absolute anarchy.
They just fucking attacked me, lads. Do you know what
fucking
I mean?
And hell.
I went on to be granny at the time, Nancy, and I was just like, I'd given all this up. And she was the one who instilled in me, no, this is it. This is
not going
keep
back
going, keep going. And you know what? I went, she must be right. And so that was my first real, like in the pit, in the fire, learning in the trenches. And then my first pro gig, was actually in the Forum in Waterford.
Oh, right.
We gigged there.
Yeah.
So it was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Kieran
was,
down there.
Yeah.
And I actually brought Woody Harrelson playing bingo there one time. Not a random story. But anyway,
just came into my head. In a minute.
But I actually did. But the Forum of Waterford, first ever gig, I put a tour on sale after my first TV series here. So that would have been, 25 odd years ago.
Your first TV was 25 years ago?
Yeah, it would have been on RTE, yeah.
Right, okay.
And then I did the Forum, and that was great crack, because actually I realised... Oh, I can actually do this. So that wasn't horrendous. It was brilliant. Got to stand and know. And that gave me the graw for it then, you know.
But also, it was at a time, Keith, 25 years ago when TV had a much bigger impact than, say, it does now.
Completely.
So when you're on the telly, your own series, those gigs are going to sell.
Do you know what the funny thing is? Like, all those years ago, when I did Close Encounters with Keith Barry. So that was Sunday at 6:30 on RTE. And basically, like, everyone used to sit and watch that.
Yeah.
So, like, in a weird way, and I'm actually grateful that it's not like this now, but, like, lads, after a second series that, I could walk down the street. Like, I was a proper, like, celebrity.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want the back. I was great fun at the time, but, like, I couldn't walk 5 feet without somebody going, do a trick.
Yeah.
Now, I loved it. I was very grateful for it. But now, it's harder, like we were talking about before, it's harder to kind of, I suppose, compete and sell tickets in one way, because back then, it was like, you did a couple of radio interviews, you did your TV show, and you were selling out everywhere. Whereas now, there's a lot of competition in the market. We got podcasts, we got Instagram, Facebook, and all the rest of it. But I think it's better now, I suppose, because it's more accessibility for up and coming entertainers as well.
100%. You know? I mean, people have made their own careers through social media, you know, and without the use of television. We were only talking about this recently on the podcast. The reduced impact the Late Late Show has.
Oh yeah,
it used to be you go on that, you sit on that chair, that's your whole tour sold out, and now it's less so.
Yeah.
It still has an impact, but not as big an impact.
Yeah, like you go on, it's awareness. That's all. Yeah. But you're right. Like years ago, you go on and you'd ring MCD or Aiken, whoever your promoter was. But with me, it'd be MCD. And they'd say, you just sold 7,500 tickets overnight or whatever it was. Like, now I don't, I haven't had anyone, and I chat to a lot of different people in the industry, musicians, comedians, and everyone's saying the same story. Like, it's great for awareness, but that impact of sales doesn't happen anymore for the late, you know?
The Tree Arena gig, Keith, I'm fascinated because of the vastness of the Tree Arena and what you do. And, you know, you said you do, I mean, you go back to your early days of table hopping to a vastly different experience in that it's in a massive venue, thousands at the gig. You're on a big, big stage. So obviously, like, have you played gigs like that before, Keith? Big, big, big stadium gigs, if you will, in terms of, it's a different kind of experience for the audience.
Yeah, so weirdly, the answer is yes. So the biggest gig I've ever done is actually outdoors, and that was the Waterford Winterville. But it was a stage. Right. So like, I was on a stage, and I performed to 10,000 people on the streets of Waterford. So that was mental. That was a good few years ago. And that was the Woody Harrelson loop in, right? So I was working on Now You See Me 2 at the time in London, which is the Magic movie.
You were an advisor, weren't you?
Yeah. So I was heavily involved in that, in Number 2. So I was living in London at the time for 3 months, working on set every day. And I got into trouble for this. I haven't really told this story properly before. So we're on set one day, and I said to Woody, look, I'm doing this big stunt in Waterford at the weekend. So I was doing 2 spots for the Winterfell. One was an escape, where I was hanging upside down from a crane, wrapped in chains and a straitjacket, but also my head was wrapped in cling film. That's my twist on the trick. So I couldn't see or breathe. And then from the stage, I made it properly snow from my hands for 10,000 people. And they could see it coming out of my hands with my sleeves rolled up. Jeez. And made it snow on top. There was snow nowhere else except for those 10,000 people, but they couldn't figure out how it worked, like, right? So I just said to Woody, listen, Woody, this weekend I'm doing this big stunt. You fancy come to Waterford? Like, it was the most random thing I said to him. He was like, yeah, buddy, yeah. And he was serious. So the next minute he told production that he wasn't going to turn up on Monday for filming, and I got into big trouble because they'd planned a whole day around him.
Of course,
him. And the producer came down to me, what the fuck are you doing?
Inviting him to Ireland.
And he's like, he says you make it back on time for filming, but we know Woody. Woody's liable to go missing. And are you going to be having eyeballs on him? I said, look, I'll have eyeballs on him for the whole weekend. But it was quite a serious thing. And anyway, next minute he turned up and I hadn't told anyone. So if you imagine I'm standing on stage in front of 10,000 people in Waterford, right? Next minute I go, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce somebody who's flown over here, especially for today. It's Woody Harrelson. Wow. And everybody's like, what's going on here?
What the fuck?
And then Woody is a vegan. And the forum, Kieran, had put a restaurant in at the time, and it was the only restaurant that could really cater at that time properly to a vegan. So I teed him up. We went down there. But Kieran had changed the forum into a bingo hall. So we went for dinner there after an event, and I said, do you want to go play bingo? So we went in, and there's a photograph of us, and they put it up online as like the weirdest moment in entertainment of that year. I can't remember the year now.
Keep out
in Ireland,
me bingo.
And Woody playing bingo in the forum, like, you know.
And I only went to see the new film, literally about a month ago.
Yeah, the new one's out. I wasn't on the new one.
And I really, really enjoyed it. They're great movies. They're really good movies.
I'm still very close to the cast and the crew. So like, I was delighted to see that movie did well. The third one did well.
And
it's
mad. I had the pleasure of meeting Woody Harrelson.
Same here.
I went to see Kevin Bridges.
Oh, yeah.
In the Tree Arena. And we went backstage. And actually, David Blaine.
Blaine.
Was there.
Yeah, yeah.
So and Woody Harrelson. And then when I came out of the toilets, David Blaine.
How long ago was that?
That was about 6 years
ago. 6-7 years
ago. Yeah, Blaine has been here a couple of times. He played the Three Arena. He played the Borcosh when he was here.
So what happened was Kevin invited us as guests, and we were sitting there enjoying the show. And then he says, and don't forget, come backstage afterwards. And we were like, well, how would you get backstage in the Three Arena kind of thing?
Yeah.
He pops his head over the door at the side and goes, come on.
We're like, yeah.
So he legged it in, and my brother's with me fainting, and he was like, this is fucking mad. I'm bleeding. Woody Harrelson's there. I'm going, Woody Harrelson's there? What the fuck is... And I said to Kevin, I said, what the fuck is started Woody Harrelson? He says, I've been on tour now for a few weeks now. My manager around me said, Woody Harrelson wants to come and see your show. I don't know why I'm doing a bit.
Woody pops up at the most random...
And he said he went on the piss for about 2 days.
He came into Ireland a couple of years back separately again, and he rang me and I went in and met him, and he wanted to go cycling and we couldn't find bikes. So I said, look, come on to fuck, we'll go to Searson's. So I brought him to Searson's.
Searson's great.
I brought him to Searson's for a pint, right? Because he was staying in the, must have been the Continental, isn't that
right? Right, yeah.
So we just walked to Searson's, and the next minute he gets a phone call and he goes, come on, we're going to dinner. And now, listen, I've been, when he says that, right, it's like the maddest things happen to me. Like, I turned up for dinner with him one time, and it was him, David Blaine's manager, Guy Asiri. So it was him, Guy Asiri, Kylie Minogue and Rita Ora were there for dinner, and me.
What the fuck? That's mad.
And that was in London. So I was back to Searson's, right? I was sitting with him at Searson's, and his phone goes off, and he goes, we're going for dinner. I said, okay, where are we going for dinner? Are we going out to Edge's house? I was like, okay, fair enough.
Edge?
Yeah.
The Edge.
And I was like, okay. So we went to the Edge's house. Now, I know the Edge, so I've met him a couple of times. So, like, I knew when it turned up. It wasn't like I was a newbie landing in his house, like, you know. But then we sat there and we had dinner. And we were there till, like, the early hours. And I had to be at the Galway Film Festival to talk about. Now, he's seen me the next morning. And let's just say I'd had enough drink that I couldn't drive the next day. So I had to call Colm Dawson. You know Colly.
Colly, a good friend
of mine. So Colm, I can't drive. I'm going to have to get a taxi or something to Galway. I don't know what to do. Any chance, because he's a good mate of mine, any chance you're around here? Yeah, no bother. Come on, I'll drive you up. Yeah. So he drove me up to the Galway Film Colly Festival. So that there's coming to the Woody Harrelson's. But back to your other question, right? Like arena size.
Yes.
So I'd never played that size event before, except AIB got me in recently for their leadership conference, because I do a lot of keynotes and motivational speeches, and their leadership conference was on the Three Arena recently. So that was 3,000 people. So I got a taster for it.
Yeah, you got a feeling for it, I suppose.
And I felt really comfortable.
And the acoustics and all that.
I felt really comfortable. Like, yeah. I got really scared, because I don't mind showing vulnerability. I got really scared in the Bord Gáis last year, because when you go up, you look up three tiers, like, you can't see anything up there. Yeah. And it's real distance. Whereas, weirdly, in the Three Arena, the way it's set out there, they have a new configuration in there. The way that's set out now, you can see the person in the back row.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
from my own perspective, I always want to make sure I provide value for money for people. So I'm putting a gigantic production into the Three Arena.
I was thinking that.
You know, big stage, but also like
big screens.
Three gigantic screens, three camera shoot, but the shoot won't be just on me. The shoot will be on members of the audience. So if I pick you, we'll get a catch box out to you. Your giant face will be on a screen.
Amazing.
And then inviting people up and getting people up and all that kind of crack.
Because I was wondering, like, when you said earlier on, you'll get a few people up on the stage, how do you pick from a fucking vast?
Oh, I just say, so, I have specific ways to pick random people. We'll just say there's demonstrations, if you want to call them that, that involve like two people. But then with the hypnosis, I'll just go, who wants to come up? And then once we fill the stage, we just go, that's it, nobody else. And here's the thing. I always say the opposite of what other hypnotists have said, right? So I've never been to a hypnotist, ever, without them saying the same thing. And the same thing is, it's a disclaimer, right, at the start of the show. I'm not going to make you do anything silly or foolish. I'm not going to make you do anything against your morals or values. You're going to have a wonderful time up here, and you're not going to do things that you wouldn't ordinarily do. I say the complete opposite. I go, you're going to do things against your morals and your values. You're going to do things you wouldn't ordinarily do. If later on you think you'll have a problem with that, or if you think even your partner will have a problem with that, do not come up on this stage. I'll repeat that. Do not come up on the stage. No, other than that, if you want to come up on the stage, come on up. And guess what? They sprint up to the stage still. They still want to come up.
And then you know they're willing as well.
But this is it.
You know,
I just don't want anybody emailing me afterwards and go, oh, you shouldn't have got me to do that. Well, I told you at the start you're going to do things you want to do. You know what I mean?
Like, anyone
that's the point of being hypnotized.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. If you're going to a hypnotist show and you volunteered to be hypnotized, you've no business criticizing the hypnotist for making you do the chicken dance or whatever.
And on that, like the thing is, like, with me, like, I pride myself on having original skits in the show. And then the other thing is, like, the three of us most likely have seen, because of our age demographic, have seen, like, a couple of hypnotists, right? But if you think about it, I've interviewed, I don't know how many people in the last few months, just, like, casually saying, have you ever seen a hypnotist? I'm talking about people in their 20s and 30s. They've never seen one. Except on TikTok or YouTube or something.
It's kind of dying art, isn't it?
They've never seen one. Yeah. Certainly not in a theatre perspective, right? They might have seen one maybe at a wedding, maybe, or maybe at a party or something like that. Mm. But they haven't seen one on a theatrical stage. So I'm excited to do that part of it again. Like, you know what I mean? Because really, that's as close to real magic as you can get. Like, you know, just no props. You're not hiding behind anything. I like comedy in that regard, you know? Yeah. Either the joke hits or it flops. Hypnosis either works or doesn't work. There's no in between there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. In the planning process for this big show, Keith, how much time did you take out to basically write it?
I've been working on it for most of the year now.
Right.
But then, just scheduling-wise, we only had 3 days to get together and rehearse. It's not a lot of time, because normally for something like this you'd be taking 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But I kind of like the hoo-ha of that.
The jeopardy of it.
Yeah, I do. Live on that. I kind of live on the jeopardy of it, of opening night, like, you know, do we even get that prop? Is that prop arrived? Like, is that, and like, where's my script? Did I learn it on Christmas Day?
Wow.
But I have it in my, like, but I like not being over-scripted or over-rehearsed either, like, because I don't want to be that guy just delivering lines
word
here.
For word,
I like the improv. Like, a lot of my shows, if anybody's been at them, they'll know it is improv, because I'm just dealing with, one night I'll have a 70-year-old on stage for a specific routine, but the next night I might have an 18-year-old, and that's a very different dynamic for the same routine, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And just even the way you talk to them and all that kind of thing.
But it's like you guys, like, you're not just standing there having jokes, you know what I mean? Like, some comedians do that, but, like, I know your styles. Your style is having the banter with the audience, as well as, you've got like a structure. And you follow your structure, but after that, then you deviate from the structure.
Yeah, of course. You have in your head, you kind of have a little script, but you try and make it sound as natural as possible, almost conversational.
Yeah, exactly.
If you will, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. Keith, we have this little section in our show called Mush. And basically, we'll give you a bit of context on this, Keith. We did a podcast a good few months ago, and where did it all come from? Was it your missus, was it?
Yeah, we were talking about something about the price of something, and years ago, when you used to go down the flats, or people used to say much, Like, if you just bought a new pair of trainers, they go, much.
Yeah.
You go 60 quid or whatever.
All so right, okay, yeah, yeah.
Instead of how much were they, right, you much. Just go, much.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that's where it kind of originated from. So the section is, we give you an imaginary 100 euros.
Yep.
And you take a night out in Dublin with that 100 euros.
Yep.
Take it in, whether it's a show, a gig, a comedy gig, a play, whatever it might be. And you eat for that money and you have a drink, what do you do with that 100 euros?
Just give it away. You won't eat it.
Wouldn't last long
at Dublin. You're not eating and getting a drink and a show done for 100 quid. You got off your head there.
We have to rethink this section. Yeah.
Well, actually, I can look up how much the tickets are, because I'm going to go to a show. I have it in the diary and it hasn't changed, because I always put some in the diary and then if work comes in, I'll kick it out of the diary. So I'll wait the last minute to buy tickets, right? Although, don't wait the last minute to get your tickets for my show.
No, don't do it now.
Great. Christmas present, stocking present, get Christmas down and present, tea party.
Yeah. Yeah. We all get scared when people wait the last minute.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
You know? So I actually put it in the diary. I know I'm going to go do a gig. I think it's definitely January. Huey Morgan's coming to...
The Fun Loving Criminals?
Yeah, to Whelan's.
Yeah, yeah,
so
I've seen that.
I'm going to go to Huey Morgan. Now, Huey and I have history in a good way. I'm actually still relatively good friends with Huey, even though we wouldn't talk for like years. You know what I mean? So I became good friends with you when they were in the Fun Loving Criminals. And they've disbanded now as the Fun Loving Criminals. Fun Loving Criminals are still the Fun Loving Criminals. So one of the founding members is, I think it's Fast.
So they're the Fun Loving Criminals without Huey. Oh, wow. Fun Loving Criminals.
Doesn't work.
He was the Fun Loving Criminals.
Yeah, it doesn't work in my head, right? But they're still doing their thing. So I think he's called himself the original Fun Loving Criminal, right?
Oh, okay.
So I think that's the way it's gone. But I actually love watching people who I think have... So I'll split it between him and there's one act I want to get to. I love people who I think just have natural charisma. I think Huey Morgan has an amazing level of charisma, right? Him and Mick Pyro. So I want to go see Mick Pyro. So if Mick Pyro was in Whelan's or somewhere else same night, Mick, I'd pick you over Huey. What? So I need to get to Mick, right? So hopefully I'll be able to afford tickets for 100 quid for one of the two of them.
Two of them boast my charisma, by the way.
Do you know what? I think actually Mick could hire himself as an advisor to entertainers on charisma.
How to be a frontman.
But even for comedians and magicians and mentalists, like just the craft of stage presence, exactly that. But like I actually really like the Fun Loving Criminals music, which I'm guessing is what he'll be playing anyway. So I'll probably go to him.
So the tickets will be around about 30 euro, 40 euro?
I'm going to guess. Yeah.
Let's say 30. So just say you've 70 left.
Yeah.
And you want a bit of food.
Where
would
you go for a point before it? Or something to eat before?
Oh, would you be in Whelan's having a drink?
Yeah. No, I actually like Whelan's a lot as a venue, right?
Yeah.
But like, I would probably go to Bruxelles.
Oh, yeah.
Because like I've had more good nights than bad. I've never had a bad night in Bruxelles.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, right? And normally there's a bit of music playing downstairs or whatever.
The last time we were in Bruxelles, we were with Usher.
And I bet you had a great night.
We had a brilliant night.
Usher was on, and it was a Point Depot at the time, wasn't
it? Yeah.
And there was a load of people in the bar, real kind of...
His entourage.
There was a load of people. Going, what's the story? You're going, one of them says, I'm a dancer with Usher, like... And we were going, is he coming to the pub? He goes, he is.
He's over there. We were like, what?
Mad.
And we went, it's a story. You want to the program? Yeah, no problem, guys.
That's brilliant. But one of my favourite nights out in Dublin is Dave Brown of Picture House. He does a Monday nights in Bruxelles.
Okay.
And it's deadly. Because, like, it's amazing musicians and it's him and he's got an amazing voice. And you go in there. I went in there one time, right? And then there was a couple of Americans over. There were clients of mine from America and they were over. And I said, come on, I'll bring you around town. And we went to a few different spots. But we ended up in Bruxelles, right? And everyone, like, Dave Brown was banging it out. And everyone was just kind of there bopping, right? But it was bubbling, right? But it wasn't kicking off. And I had plenty of points on me at that stage. And I walked in, I grabbed some old fella. He's about 70. And I pulled him up and just started dancing. The whole place just jumped up straight away. There was no heating them up. Like, they're already heating up. They were just looking for an excuse. I made the excuse with this old fella. And my wife was looking at me going, oh,
I can't bring him anywhere.
They're the best nights.
Yeah. So I'd go to Bruxelles. I'd go with Huey. And then, do you know what? I'm quite simple behind the scenes. Like, I used to love, I just haven't been there in a long time and I know it's changed. I used to love Coppinger Row before, but that'd be too expensive. So I'd go to Abercrombie.
Yes!
Would you know what? Come here.
I love a kebab.
Yeah. I got food poisoning in Africa. No.
Put that beard out.
I'm gonna go back, and I'm going back to the '90s. Yeah. And I got a chicken baguette out of it. They used to do this chicken baguette.
You're supposed to do kebab. And I ran
the bleeding.
Yeah. What are you
doing? I ran the brand of frick around me. I swear to God, I would never eat an African kebab.
And you've been a Zaytoons man ever since.
Well, I have Zaytoons, but I mean, I keep saying the best kebab in the country, not that I'm plugging for the Manhattan, in my opinion, is the Kebab Palace in Drogheda.
Okay.
If you think you've had a nice kebab, you have not had a kebab until you go to this place.
Right, I go there for dinner when I'm down in the TLT.
Well, I'm telling you, if you like a kebab, go into that place. It's unbelievable.
Keith, how long is the tour?
So, every weekend up until Paddy's Day.
Oh, Paddy.
Yeah, it's every 3 months. It's Friday and Saturdays only.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, it's about 25 days.
And is that a chance to just let you breathe and just re-energise and all that kind of thing? Was that a deliberate ploy, Fridays and Saturdays?
No, well, it's because my corporate work is during the week. So
it was me.
No, but like, you know what I mean? So, I just couldn't do any other nights. So, like, for example, after Cork Opera House, I got to hightail it up home, pack a suitcase, get to the States, like straight after. Get to the States. I'm hosting a conference there, a software conference. So I do a lot of MC work. So I'm hosting a software conference for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Thursday, I red eye out. I land here Friday and go straight up and do the black box of comedy.
Oh my God.
So it's that kind of schedule. Like, you know what I mean?
How do you cope with the jet lag and all that?
I think jet lag is a load of bullshit.
Do you think so? Yeah.
I tell that to myself.
I just had to jump off a plane from England.
Drink on the plane and then go to a coma.
He's getting all these corporate gigs because he's going up to people afterwards. That was a great gig.
Yeah,
that was a great gig. We book him again next year.
Yeah, exactly. Look into my eyes. Yeah. It's a brilliant gig.
Jesus, that's some travelling.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot, but like, I love it. So, the tour for me, though, back to your point, is like, it's a creative outlet.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because in the corporate world, look, you have to be very mindful of what you're doing and saying. And my keynotes, like, they're motivational, right? So it's about 80% content and takeaway and mindset. Think about mindset change. And then 20% I still put in the fun factor. But I still love acting the maggot and not being answerable to anybody else.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, you know, when you're on stage, book stops with you.
Yeah.
You say what you want.
Yeah, yeah.
And it either lands or it doesn't land. And it's the same with me. Like, I produce and direct the show. So, and I write the show. So,
yeah.
And I'm in the show. So it's like, okay, finally this is me. So, like, back to what you were saying. Like, I've done TV shows all over the world. So it's not just RTE, TV3, Discovery Channel. Like, all the places I've done my TV. Everyone else has an opinion. Like, Discovery Channel made me lose 2 stone and dye my hair, right? Because they said I was too muscly. I'd actually beefed up at the time. I was going into Body Burn here in town.
Yeah, you were in shape and all.
Burn.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're not in shape now, but you were.
No, but I was lifting heavy
weights. Built. Yeah.
And he got me into good nick. And I went over there like, no, you're not Discovery. And I was like, what do you mean? You lose all that weight? And I was like, but it's muscle. And they were like, no. So they hired me a personal trainer to basically starve me and do like hip workouts to lose all the muscle
fucking
and all the weight.
Hell.
And then the producer was like, I don't like the colour of your hair. And I was like, I don't care. And she was like, well, you know, this is us and we're Discovery and we do what we want with you. So dye your hair. So this is the absolute gospel truth. Because Willis said he's going to Beverly Hills soon, right?
Yeah.
So a friend of mine, I haven't been in contact with her in a while, but Maxine Lyon, still consider a good friend, even though we haven't been in touch. She used to do my hair and she had a salon in Beverly Hills Hotel, right? She had her own salon.
You got a dinner on Christmas, yeah.
And in that hotel, Maxine Lyon, she had a salon in there, and the Discovery Channel producer, we'll leave that person unnamed, but one of the producers came and stood there while Maxine was told to dye my hair like jet brown, even though it's dark now, it was lighter back in the day. So I had to sit there while my friend, who knew I didn't want my hair dyed brown, Maxine, had to dye my hair brown because there was a Discovery producer.
This is a witness there.
So my point of all this is, right, every TV program I've ever done, everyone has an opinion, all the producers, all the directors, everyone, and everyone tells you to do this and that and the other. And invariably, most of the time, I'll just say it out, like, they're wrong, what they're saying.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like, I suppose, facetious or big-headed me, but if I have a creative vision and I kind of know my art and my craft, because I've burnt my hands in the toasters at McDonald's and I've done the ships and the boats. So I kind of know what I'm talking about at this stage.
Yeah.
Your creative vision never gets seen, right? And it's kind of stifled. So that's what I love about being on tour. It unhinged. It's me. It's me being me on stage.
Yeah,
of course,
an
exaggerated form of me, but like, and that's why I love it. And that's why I still want to get on that stage. Like,
so it still drives you, Keith, that live performance.
Yeah, like, I keep saying that this is probably going to be my last tour, but I'm saying probably because I don't want people to say, you said it was his last tour and now he's doing a comeback. But I'm just so busy with the corporate work. It's hard to do both, right?
Right.
So I certainly won't tour again for a long time.
Okay.
But the reason the tour is there is just for that fun and creative outlet, and I love being on the road. And the best decision I ever made, you're probably the same now at this stage, like years ago I'd go on the lash every night before I had kids, and now for about 17 years I drive myself to the gig.
So you don't have a drink.
So don't have a drink afterwards. Yeah. I purposely don't have a drink, right? Yeah. And then I come home and I sit down and I dribble watching Judge Judy. Me and Judge Judy. I've had a love affair with Judge Judy every night.
Yeah, that's mad, because I live a kind of very simple life like that as well. Yeah. After I do a big gig,
you just disappear.
I just jump in the car and go home and put my shorts on and sit up on the sofa and watch a bit of telly and have a sausage and batter and chips or something
like
that. That's that, you know, me mates will be going, Judge, what you doing after the gig? Yeah, where were you? And all, and going, I said, I was in the gaff an hour later.
Unless the venues are really far away, then I'll go out, like, so in Killarney, like, I'll probably have a night out afterwards or something, you know what I mean? But they're very rare now. Especially, like, you know, my kids are at the age of going to be on the rugby pitch on a Saturday morning or bring her to karate or something like that. So I'd rather be. But I don't sleep well when I'm on the road. I'm in hotels too much anyway, so it's better to be home.
I'm not like your own bed, is there? Not like it.
But that's it. Like, you know, I mean, the travel is great, the hotels are great, but like, you know, I'm on my own and all. My wife doesn't cook any of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, same.
So she's like, that's a really nice hotel you're staying. Yeah, but it's no good to me. Like,
yeah, I'm on my Sweeney.
Yeah.
I think everybody has the best bed in the world, don't they?
Oh,
when you get into your bed, you go, my bed is the best bed in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've slept in beds that
I was in your bed, Willie. It wasn't that good.
I know, but that's another show. But you know where I stayed, and there's like, the beds are actually unbelievable. Drew's Glen Hotel.
Oh.
The beds are really, really nice down there, yeah. But I still think my bed's the best in the world.
Of course, everyone does. It's the one thing, when I get to bed every night, me missus, I always go, do you know what, this is my favourite time of the day, getting into bed beside you.
The only thing that I'm very, very fussy about in staying in hotels is I can understand why people bring their pillow with them. You ever see some people travelling and they have a pillow?
Yeah.
Well, I'm very, very pushy on pillows.
Well, toilet paper's my thing. I hate that. I hate staying in a really nice, like, really nice hotel. Could be a 5-star hotel. You go in, you go to the toilet in the morning, you go to wipe yourself, and it's this cheap toilet roll.
Sandpaper.
Used to have in college. Like, like, you've got these luxury towels.
Yeah.
And it's like 2,000 thread count linen on you. And this stuff
it's like sand banisters.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that blue roll.
Yeah,
they just let themselves down.
Just a Brillo pad up your
It's either 5-star or it's not 5-star.
You know what everybody's looking at? Like, you know, what's the next thing? Like, there was a guy, I think, last year who did reviews on 99 ice creams. And, like, he went viral because it's a new thing. Like, nobody'd ever done a review on a 99 ice cream before. And everyone's done. I keep thinking I've got to go around and do reviews on toilets.
Do you know what?
But I think it'd be so weird if you're in there filming. But, like, just the state to some toilets around the place.
Yeah.
And then the ones that surprise you, that are really nice toilets. You know what I mean? I keep thinking toilet reviews needs to be a thing. Like,
I think you could be onto something there, Keith, because it's something I always look out for as well. When I went to a garage and I'm like, oh God, I can't remember. And then you go in and go, oh my God, it's actually really nice. I went
into some garages to go to Jack's, and I'm not joking with you. The Jack's in the Holden Cell and the Bridewell's in better nick.
Really well.
Honest to God, man, I'm not joking. One thing I don't like sitting on a cold toilet seat.
But
there used to be these things.
That's cheap toilet roll.
How do we get onto this, lad?
When my mum lived in London, she had, like, in our bathroom, she had...
Oh, the 40 thing?
No, she had a spongy toilet seat with leather on it. And it was always warm when you sat on it. It was lovely. I hate sitting down on a freezing...
Bet you can get one of those off Amazon, you know. Heater and all.
Yeah. I hate sitting down on a freezing toilet seat.
Well, isn't the next level toilet at the moment the Japanese toilets, apparently, because they play mood music.
But do they? Yeah, out of the toilet?
I've seen it. They play mood music and you don't have to get up off the toilet.
I was going to say, but you're supposed to get in and out as fast as you can.
I'll tell you what I'm going to say, because your arse is leftless. The Japanese flag when you get off it.
You're going to end up with piles sitting there too long, like, you know what I mean?
Well, you don't have to look to wipe your ass because it washes your ass and then it dries it. Does the hair dryer thing as well.
Jesus.
I don't know, we'll be into that.
I'd love to give it a go. I'd give it a go.
Would you?
Well, Wim Hof bursts bowel by sitting on a geezer one time, washing it.
So there you go. he was in London, was he?
Why, Mike? Like, lads, I know.
How are you sitting on,
as
John?
You can tell, I know the most random stuff. If you ever see Wim Hof, the famous Wim Hof, he's got a big scar here, right? That's because he decided to give himself an enema by sitting on a geezer for real, like.
Oh my God!
Burst his bowel. And
jeez, that could have been fatal.
Oh no, he nearly killed himself.
Fucking hell.
So don't, I'm like you, I don't have to be into it. I mean, if the pressure is too hard.
Well, do you know what? I'm sure
there's a coming out.
I'm sure there's a setting that says less than Wim Hof.
Yeah, less than Wim Hof.
Wim Hof setting bowel surgery. Oh, how did we even end up that road? Anyway, from just,
when you mentioned sponge, it reminded me what you said earlier on. The sponge, what was it? The
sponge. Oh, sponge rabbits. Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that.
So I used to do magic in the kitchen nightclub, right? Every Friday night.
That's who your new edge.
Yeah. Yeah. It actually is.
Yeah, there, right, you go.
So I used to, when I moved to Dublin originally, I was like, I'm going to be a magician. I've got to figure this out. So I was doing the day job as a cosmetic scientist. So I asked somebody in work, I was like, where's the top nightclub in Dublin? And they said the kitchen. So it was the kitchen at the time. Grand. So I went down there with a guy. I remember his name. I haven't been in contact with him in years. Damien Crosby. Shout out to Damien. So he said, come on, I'll go with you. So I was working with him. And we went down to go to the kitchen, and there was a queue. People forget, back in the time, but there were queues going around the building to get in. Yeah, yeah. And I went down with him, and he's like, ah, come on, we're not getting in. I said, what do you mean we're not? You know, come on. And I went, skipped the queue, and I went to walk in, and the bouncer's name, remember his name as well, Gareth. Gareth is still on the door of one of the bars here on Dawson Street. Right? He's still out. You'd know him. And I went to walk in, he's like, stop, we're full. And I goes, do you not know who I am? And he was like, who are you?
Said, yeah, just me.
No, I'm the celebrity magician. And he's like, and he did
wasn't
bat an eyelid. Like, Gareth, if you like, real stern face, you go, do his trick then. I'm like, no smile, right? Do his trick then. And I had me sponge rabbits on me. And I did the sponge rabbits. The next minute, I could see him going on the walkie. Ricky, we got some guy who says he's a pop. He's just blowing my mind. I'm like, let him in.
Sponge rabbits.
And the next minute, they let me in. So we're in. And then we get into the VIP area. And then Ricky, at the time, the manager, he was like, look, we're having a stay back, a lock-in. Will you stay back and just do a couple of tricks for the staff? So I said, yeah. And this is where, I don't know why, I just had this entrepreneurial thing in me. And so I pitched there and then, like, pissed as a hoot to Ricky. I was like, I want to do magic in the VIP area every Friday night. And he goes, how much? I remember how much. It was £80. I'm like, give us £80. He went, done. So I end up in the kitchen every year for years, wow, every Friday night. And there was one time I'd been in the kitchen and I was flying out to the States. Even at that young age, I was flying out to the States.
Because the kitchen was the place to go at that stage.
It really was.
Your next door neighbour was one of the DJs.
Yeah, Davo, yeah.
It was pre, kind of, whatever, the Lilies and pre-Rainards, you know. So anyway, I was flying to the States. Now, I wasn't gigging. I was flying out there to try and pitch TV or whatever. And at that time, I had no money. So I was flying through Newark to get to LA, right? So that was the kind of route you had to go through. Anyway, I was flying in. And it was just after September 11th happened. So it was October after September 11th. So it was red alert, high security everywhere. No one really knew what was going on except, like, the, you know, obviously the terrorism attack. So I'm about an hour outside Newark and the captain comes on. The pilot comes on. He goes, ladies and gentlemen, the plane has just crashed in Queens. We're unsure if it's terrorism related or not. We're now going to Ohio because they've closed the airspace. Thank you so much. Remember, we're unsure if this is terrorism related. So he's basically saying to us, this could be terrorism. You're in the air. Your job is to look out. So now we are all looking at each other like all paranoid.
On edge,
like, you know?
Yeah.
And then, again. And it was and it was still, you remember back in the day, they used to have the big clunky phones on the
plane
where you could put in your credit card or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So everyone grabbed those and started the credit card home, right, to say it's not us that have crashed because we were close. We would have been around that region where that plane crashed. So anyway, we all rang home. I don't know if I got through or not. I can't remember. But anyway, we landed in Ohio. They wouldn't let us off the plane. We're on the plane for like 6 hours. Eventually, the airspace cleared. We get back to Newark and it's still red alert, right? So I'm going through security. I'm wrecked. I'm tired. And it was carrying me briefcase. I used to have a briefcase at the time, and in that I had decks of cards and I had me sponge rabbits and I had other tricks, and I go through, right,
turn through the x-ray machine,
but I would always carry it at the time because if my luggage went missing I could still do the act.
So tools,
and there was never a problem. They would always open it up because I'd done it many times. They'd always open it up and have a quick look, and I'd just say I'm a magician. They go, oh yeah, another magician. So but this time a man opened it up, right, and he took out my cards. He started going through one card at a time. Now I had about 10 decks cards now. And he's going through it and I'm like, Jesus Christ, I'm wrecked. And the next minute I see him reaching for this black wallet that was in the suitcase or the briefcase. I was like, sorry, just don't open that, would you mind, don't open that, I'm telling him not to open. He's like, stand back. I was like, no, I need to tell you about. And then he opens up and goes, and he goes to take out a card, like, so there's a card with a question mark in this little wallet. I go, no, don't take that out. He goes, stand back. So I had set this trick the night before, and I used to do it every night at the kitchen nightclub, and it was all based around phobias, different phobias that people had, and I had these phobias printed on these cards, right, and one was hippopotamus monstrous equipped aliophobia, which is a real phobia. It's the fear of long words, right?
So, Jesus.
But funny phobias, and loads of these different phobias, and ligorophobia, which is the fear of loud noises. So anyway, the whole gag is I give you the cards, you mix them up, you take one out, I make sure that you get ligorophobia, which is the fear of loud noise, and I go, look, there's a prediction in my wallet there, it's a question mark. trademark. Would you be amazed if printed on the other side that is the word Lingerphobia? Yeah, you could take it out and turn it over. But as the surprise, instead of it being printed Lingerphobia, I had three bangers on the other side because it's Lingerphobia, it's the pure loud noises, right? It's the prediction, right? And you can see where this is going, right? Yeah. So, now, when I say bangers, like the ones that, you know, the ones that you put underneath a C's,
yeah, right? Yeah.
But they make a big bang, like, yeah. You know what I mean? So, but and sometimes I realised after I got it made, I realised like one sometimes doesn't go off. So I put three of them on the back, right?
Seriously?
So it's like bang, 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 right? And the next minute, this guy's stand back, and I'm like, no, please, can I take that out? Don't take that out. And he's getting agitated at me for that. And the next minute, of course, he takes it out, right? Bang, bang, bang. And there's smoke coming off my case. And two soldiers come at me, guns drawn. Guns drawn, right? And I'm like, I told him I'm a magician. And one guy who's really young, like he looked about 20, right? He's shaking like this. I could have fucking shot you. I could have fucking shot you. And there's this old guy. He looks like he's from Nam. And he goes, oh, another fucking magician. Right? He's just like, but then they called a head of security for Newark Airport down. There's a woman. She pulled me into a room. Do you think this is a time to be joking? You know. And actually, weirdly, that time, like if you Google it, you'll find it. The US government or whatever, they came out within a week and said, oh, that plane that crashed over Queens, that was just a flock of birds went into the engine and it's fine. Like they literally, that was in the news for a day.
Yeah.
And it was hundreds and hundreds of people killed in that. Like a lot of people were killed in that plane crash. So I still think looking back, I haven't really Googled it much, but I still think looking back, there could be a lot more to that, why that plane crashed. And I actually could have been in a real kind of terrorism scenario, almost. Like I was, you know what I mean? And
well, I mean, the country was on high alert.
High alert.
And then so, with that as well.
So it was mentally, yeah, so idiot here. So I stopped carrying anything that could be perceived as being dangerous in my luggage.
Fucking hell, Jesus.
You were lucky you weren't shot. Your man could have shot you.
Oh, yeah. There's one time I did, I'm saying I stopped traveling stuff, but I can't remember this before or after. I was going through, I was doing a gig in Russia one time. That was a whole other thing. But anyway, I was doing a gig in Russia and I had my suitcase packed and I had this act that I was doing and I'd done it for a couple of years and I'd flown doing it for a few years, right? And it was an act based around murder mystery. Think of it like that. And I'd have weapons as part of this murder mystery. So I'd have a knife or a rope.
It was like Cluedo kind of thing.
It was inspired by Cluedo, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, doing this murder mystery. But you'd always put it into your suitcase and you check on the suitcase. It was never an issue. And I would bring a plastic gun, but it was checked on. So it was like a toy gun. So it'd be like you're bringing home a toy gun for your son from Walmart.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Big.
Hector Grace.
So I put it in. And the next minute, I was thinking that now because I fly so much. Next minute, I can hear over the Tannoy in Dublin Airport. I'm walking down the gate. This is for your attention, Mr. Keith Barry. Can you please come to gate number 37, please? Mr. Keith Barry. I was like, ah, this deli, I'm getting an upgrade again. You know what I mean?
The mind control worked again.
Yeah. So I'm not even running.
I'm like, upgrade, buddy, are
I'm
you?
Sauntering on down. And the next minute, this panicked air hostess comes out. Are you, geez, Keith, have you got a gun in your check on luggage? And I was like, but it's a kid's plastic. No, like security have pulled you, like you have to go back now with me and run all the way back. So I had to run all the way back through like Dublin security, through all the gates, back to them. And then there was two cops standing there and they're like, open up your suitcase. I was like, well, I know, it's just an act that's in there and there's loads of things. Open up your suitcase. Do you have a gun in there? I was like, it's a kid's toy gun. So I opened it up. Now here's the gas part about Dublin Airport security. Not that I'm knocking you, lads. I'm sure things have changed over the years. This is a long time ago. He said, where's the gun? And I went, well, I think it's just over the left-hand side there underneath that little box there. And he went, all right. And I said, but it's only a kid's plastic gun. It's like a fiver out of Dunn Stores or something. It's far. And he went, take out the gun. I'm like, don't you think that if you were taking this really seriously and this is a real gun, I shouldn't be taking out the gun? Like,
yeah, yeah. Jesus Christ.
So it was so weird. It was so weird. I had to take out the gun and then they gave out to me and whatever and then they closed up the suitcase and they checked it on and then I was on my very way and I got on and he didn't get an upgrade, of course. But yeah, there you go. All my travel
brilliant
stories.
Jesus Christ.
Man. That's brilliant.
Sorry, I need to throw this little story. I remember going to Amsterdam once with my missus, right? And we went to the cafes, had a bit of fun. And we had the space cakes and my missus was like, oh, we have to bring someone home. She said, we cannot bring that home. Please get caught.
Anything.
And then we went to Schiphol Airport. We're going home and we were having McDonald's and she goes to me, I put a bit in the suitcase. And I went, what did you do that for?
Yeah.
Just when in Rome, we're in Amsterdam. And next of all, the Tannoy.
Oh my God.
Could Eric Lawler please come to the set? And I looked at her and I go, you fucking idiot. I bleeding knew it. And I went up to the desk and I was like, I was walking around for ages and ages and ages. And I walked over and says, how are you? I says, my name's Eric Lawler. And she goes, ah, yes, Mr. Lawler. You're flying to Dublin. I went, yeah. He says, You forgot your boarding pass. Oh, you left it in one of the shops.
Thank
like,
God.
Oh, wow. Yeah, thanks. I knew it was that. Whoa, the relief.
That's
holy
like my
shit.
Sister, though. My sister lives in the States. She's been there since she's 17. So she, I was coming home one time. She said, here, there's a couple of presents for mum. I was like, Daddy, yeah. And I, look, it's my sister. So I didn't even think about it. I didn't even ask her what it was. Like, it was all wrapped up and all. I put it in the suitcase. And next time I land home, and I take out this present, I give it to my mother, and my sister rings me and goes, oh, that's not really for mum. I was like, well, who's it for? That's for your kids. I was like, okay, well, why is it? And she goes, open it up. Fucking fireworks. She put in a suitcase
fucking
on a plane.
Hell,
over the States.
Like, I was like, a firearm.
Yeah, like 15 years ago, she did that. I was like, okay, I'm never taking that long for you ever. No presents ever again. Fireworks without telling me, like, you know.
Stop.
Keith, we are rapidly running out of time now. In fact, it's always a sign of a good conversation
when it applies
like that. But Keith Barty, 25 years unhinged, getting it. What's it called? What's the full title again? 25 years unhinged.
Unhinged, 25 years inside your minds.
Inside your minds.
Where can we get tickets? Let us know.
KeithBarty.com is the easiest place. It's a weird one. Like, some of the venues, I won't go on a rant, but like, some of the venues have their own ticket sites. Have you found this?
Yeah.
And then they split it with Ticketmaster. So you might find that some of the venues are sold out on one platform, and then you'll have to find them on another platform. Or some of the venues are actually sold out. But look, KeithBarty.com or Ticketmaster.ie. They're the two best spots. You know?
So if you were looking for an amazing show to go to, and I'm telling you,
I can vouch for it.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing stuff, and it will give you something to talk about for many a year to come in the future about what's going to happen on stage.
And the one conversation you'll have afterwards in the pub is, how the fuck did he do that?
yeah.
Said there today.
You're in a cellar with your three mates tied up.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that has been Keith Barty. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Keith.
Deadly, thanks.